Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of College Football Insiders Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Mogollon, and we have a packed show today. Joining us will be star running back from Cal, Javid Best. Some people consider him the best running back in the entire country, as well as defensive end Robert Quinn from the University of North Carolina. And what a story Quinn has. He's one of the premier pass rushers in the country. But, you know, just a couple of years ago, he had to deal with having a brain tumor as a senior in high school. And, you know, there was a point in time where he wasn't sure whether he was going to be able to continue and play sports again. And, you know, but he's overcome that, and he joined us, and he'll talk about that, as well as the editor, Kurt.
All right, we're back on the air, folks. Sorry about that little misconnection, but just to repeat again, on this show, we're going to be having Javid Best, running back from the Cal Golden Bears, joining us, as well as stellar defensive end, Robert Quinn from North Carolina, talking about overcoming a brain tumor while he was in high school, and as well as hearing from Lawrence Taylor, the former Tar Heel great. And joining us shortly should be the editor of Bama Magazine, Kirk McNair, to talk about the Alabama Crimson Tide and their upcoming contest this week against the vaunted LSU Tigers in a big-time SEC clash. You know, the winner of that game is going to dictate a lot in terms of the SEC title picture, in terms of, you know, the national title picture, to take it a step further. Both of these teams basically, and definitely in terms of the SEC title, both of these teams do have destiny in their hands. So if they just win out, they will be the SEC champ. It's not only Florida and Alabama that has destiny in their hands, but LSU does as well, because if they beat Alabama, they will have the head-to-head tiebreaker over the Crimson Tide, and that will bring them to the title game where they will take on Florida. And interestingly enough, a lot of people think that if LSU does that, they will in fact jump over undefeated teams to make it to the championship game. I'm not so sure myself. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that, especially when you factor in that, you know, not too long ago, there was an Auburn team that won the SEC conference with an undefeated record and didn't make it to the national championship game. So I don't think you can assume that the SEC champ, regardless whether they have a loss or not, will make it. I understand that a lot of the other teams that we're talking about here, in addition to Texas, you know, aren't the sexiest teams. They aren't the big name teams. When you talk about an Iowa and people are going to try to make a case for a one-loss SEC team over an undefeated Iowa, or even over an undefeated TCU team. But I think, you know, it's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy regardless of the record and, you know, two wins. I mean, wins over Alabama, wins over Florida, potentially they could knock off two top five teams. That's obviously going to be something impressive to put on the resume. There's no doubt about that. Nobody's going to argue that. But at the same time, I don't know if that's the type of thing that people are going to, you know, have a undefeated team jump over a one-loss team, particularly one from, you know, a Big Ten. I understand the Big Ten's down, and it's not going to match up with the SEC, which is why nobody's suggesting that Iowa would make it over an undefeated SEC team, when in reality they'll have a very similar resume. I mean, when you talk about doing it on the field, and that's all that should count, Iowa has done as much as anybody else if they end up finishing undefeated, particularly when you factor in they are in a BCS conference. This is what these schools agreed upon. There's nothing written there. There's nothing in the rules that states the SEC has some sort of edge over other conferences. They do have an edge over the non-BCS conferences because they don't have an automatic bid, but presumably the other six conferences, the BCS conferences, are on a somewhat level field. So I think, you know, that's why LSU still would need help in terms of a national championship. But in terms of the SEC, they really have destiny in their hands. If they can walk into Tuscaloosa, which they've done the last four times, and come out with a victory, then they could, in fact, end up being the SEC champs, and they will at least control their destiny in terms of winning the SEC West. You know, the season wouldn't be over. They would still have a couple of teams that would be more than willing to, you know, try to knock them off and do Alabama a favor. But, you know, they would have that control in their hands and potentially set up a rematch with the Florida Gators to ultimately win the SEC. Wouldn't that be interesting, considering the last three national championships have been won by Florida as well as LSU? But, you know, that's going to be just a fun, fun game, just talented players on both sides of the ball. I would love to know how many scouts are going to end up going to this game. It's just probably going to be packed with scouts, you know, so much talent on both of these teams. It's pretty impressive, and it should be no surprise as to why, you know, they're ranked where they are ranked. You know, right now we have Alabama at number two in the country, and we have LSU at number five in the country. So, you know, we're pretty high on both of these squads. We think, you know, they're worthy of national title contention, and I think a lot of it might end up coming down to the quarterback play. As I said earlier, we're waiting for Kirk McNair from the Bama magazine, where he can maybe give us some more insight on the Crimson Tide and where they're headed. My biggest concern with them, you know, I was one of those people. I didn't do it. I left Florida number one all year long, but I was one of those people who was tempted to say, is Alabama better? And I really, early on, I really did like what I saw from McElroy, the quarterback. I really thought he was emerging. And I said, you know, this kid really looks like somebody who can do more maybe than John Parker Wilson did a year ago for the Crimson Tide, you know, a team that did go 12-0 in the regular season before they fell to the Florida Gators. Let's not forget, they were 12-0 leading Florida heading into the fourth quarter. So, that you know, that's something that, you know, that team was that close. And I thought, hey, McElroy, you know, they have some weapons. And Julio Jones, obviously everybody knows about him, big-time receiving talent. We also have Marquise Mays, the second sophomore wide receiver, their number two guy, who is a big play guy. You know, he's not that classic number two possession receiver. He's that number two stretch the field, kind of a Harper to Jones is Michael Irvin, if you know what I mean, you know, to the NFL reference. And then you have Colin Peake, the tight end, who's also, you know, a weapon in the passing game. Couple that with the wide receivers catching balls out of the backfield. Ingram, Upchurch have the ability to do that. I thought maybe this year the Alabama Crimson Tide offense could be a little more explosive, potentially. You know what I mean? With the one question mark being that offensive line. Was the offensive line going to be as good as it was last year? And just about, you know, on time to chime in is Kirk McNair from the Bama magazine, I should say, to fill us in a little more on the Crimson Tide. Let me welcome him to the show. Hey, Kirk, how you doing today? Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. I'm doing great.
So, you know, I was leading the show. We obviously have been talking about this game so far, the biggest game of the week and maybe of the year for the Crimson Tide until they potentially get to that SEC championship game. And I was talking about the quarterback play and how critical that's going to be on Saturday. You know, early on, McElroy really looked like he might give them an extra dimension, maybe even more than John Parker Wilson, but as the schedule has gotten deeper into the SEC and he's faced tougher defenses, he seemed to struggle a little bit. What's your take on his development so far in his first season as starting quarterback?
Well, I think you put your finger on it. He has seen tougher defenses, and it's not just him seeing them. You know, there's a big difference in some places in that offensive line. You take Andre Smith out, and it doesn't really matter who you plug in. You're probably going to be a lot weaker at a critical position, left tackle. Alabama has a junior college transfer in there. And I'm not saying he's doing a poor job, but he's certainly not Andre Smith. And I think in the last couple of weeks, the primary reason that Greg McElroy has struggled at quarterback has been that he's been under a lot of pressure. He hadn't had much time. He's had to hurry his passes or move out of the pocket, or the receivers haven't had time to complete their routes. So there are a lot of things that go into it when passing game's not working, but obviously you first look to the quarterback.
And, you know, let's look a little bit beyond the quarterback. As you said, it definitely starts there first and foremost. But how about Julio Jones? You know, he hasn't really been as explosive and put up the numbers he did last year. How much is that him? How much is that, you know, the other stuff we've been talking about, quarterback inconsistent, maybe offensive line not giving the quarterback enough time?
Yeah, you know, Julio Jones doesn't get much one-on-one coverage. He gets a lot of attention, and that's part of it. Also, he's had some injuries. He said this week he's injury-free. He had a big game last year against LSU in Baton Rouge, and I'm sure he'd like to do that. But, you know, if there are two people on Julio Jones, that means that there's probably somebody somewhere who can get open, and that's the job of those other receivers to create some space between themselves and the defender, and it's the job of the quarterback to find those people. So Alabama's got other weapons. Obviously, Julio Jones is a big one, and if he gets free and McElroy hits him, that'll probably be a bad day for LSU.
And who do you kind of envision maybe stepping up and as that second guy? Would it be a Marcus Mays, somebody who's capable of hitting that big play over the top, or could this be a breakout game for Colin Peake taking advantage of it underneath?
You've named the two that I would guess. It'd be, you'd have to say that would be either if it's the deep ball, it's Mays, who is maybe the fastest guy on the team. And
right.
That's taken away, then I think you look to Colin Peake, who's a big target, sure-handed, tough guy. And I think that there's also the chance McElroy likes to throw to his back. So if you get a running back running in space and get him the ball, it can be pretty effective sometimes.
And let's talk about that running back, Mark Ingram, who's having a phenomenal, phenomenal season. He's one of my favorite running backs to watch. You know, he's not one of those guys that probably – won't impress everybody when he gets to the combine in terms of his speed and height and weight and all that stuff, but the kid just looks like such an instinctive runner. He knows how to make people miss.
Oh, yeah, he is. You use the exact correct word, instinctive. He is a guy who seems to disappear for a second and then reappear, you know, out of harm's way. Big-time plays in critical situations. If you notice, go back over the course of the season as he's taken over for Glenn Coffey, and you see that he really comes through when it matters most.
Yeah, he kind of I'm not one to make comparisons very often, but he kind of reminds me of another former 22, Emmitt Smith, in terms of not having those measurables, but he just knows how to get it done. On the other side of the ball, how important is a guy like Terrence Cody to this 3-4 defense that Nick Saban employs? You know, last year I was one who thought that although maybe he's not the best defender in college football, he might be the most valuable.
Well, he's an amazing athlete, and people overlook that sometimes, I think, because he's just so big. And, you know, in every game you see, every team has to spend two or three players just for a stalemate. And, you know, a stalemate's really a win for the defense. So basically the middle has been taken away of most offensive teams. They don't have that. Team like LSU, you know, they're at their very best when Scott can go up the middle, when he can run between the tackles. And when you've got a Terrence Cody on your team, you make that awfully difficult for an opposing team. And, you know, last year I don't think Cody had but about 27 tackles all year and made All-America. And it wasn't because of what he did as specifically, tangibly, as much as what he took away from what other teams could even consider doing. And so that's, of course, he's had huge plays this year, notably blocking those two field goals against Tennessee last week. But one thing that I want to stress about Terrence Cody that people may not realize is, yeah, he's big, and he's probably not ever going to be in great shape, the three-down player that maybe a pro team's looking for. But he is an incredible athlete and strong and football smart. So he's a real find for Alabama.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think, you know, a lot of times people might say he doesn't play hard on every down. But if, you know, a few times I've spoken to coaches, not only about him, but about other guys who are that mold, they said, you know, find me one guy who's 340, 350 pounds that can go hard every single play. You know, it's a lot different when you're carrying on that kind of weight.
Yeah, you're right. But he gives pretty good effort. As I said, it's sometimes he's not making a lot of movement, but it's because he's got plenty of bodies around him.
Now, on the next level is maybe my favorite player in all of college football, Rolando McClain. He stepped on the scene as a true freshman, was an impact player right away, and it just seems to me every time you watch him play, he just gets a little bit better. Talk about his development from that freshman season to now as a leader of the Crimson Tide defense.
Well, you're right. He came in as a freshman and was pretty impressive. And as a sophomore, you know, is about as good a linebacker as there was in the SEC. And as a junior, which I'm sorry to say is probably also his senior year at Alabama, he is everything you want. He's the leader of the defense. He's that coach on the field kind of guy you want. He not only knows his position, he knows the position, everybody's responsibility, and he's the guy that gets everybody where they need to be. And then, of course, when the ball snapped, he's a dynamo. He is this is a big guy who can run, who, you know, sees the field, understands what's happening, and then when he gets there, as the old saying goes, he's there in a bad mood.
Yeah, for sure. He's definitely a guy that if you're a running back, you don't want to see – you know, it's him scoping you out and him getting ready to make the hit. Now, we've talked about a lot of talented guys, but could it be that the secondary may be the most talented unit on this team?
Well, it could be. I would have said the linebacker core before the injury to Dante Hightower earlier this
right.
year. And now I'd say you could make a case that the secondary is. It was funny, I was just looking at the latest Southeastern Conference statistics, and the top three defenders against pass, that's interceptions and passes broken up, there are three Alabama guys in the top three places. Mark Barron leads the SEC in interceptions and in all pass defense. And Marquise Johnson, who's not even a starter, he's a nickelback. And Kareem Jackson, a cornerback, are also in those top three. So that doesn't even include Javier Arenas, who's a Jim Thorpe candidate, semifinalist, the other cornerback, or Justin Woodall, the senior free safety, who's a three-year starter. So, yeah, you can make a case that secondary is pretty good.
I mean, this game is going to be unbelievably fun to watch. So much talent on both sides of the ball. I'm sure there's going to be a ton of NFL scouts there to watch these guys. Kirk, before we let you go, we're talking to Kirk McNair, the editor of the Bama magazine. Before we let you go, can we get a prediction on this game?
Well, I always think Alabama's going to win, and I'm almost always right. So,
since Saban,
you know,
came over, he made you look smarter, right?
That's right. So I've been here a long time, so we've been winning a long time, too. And I think that, I think the passing game for both teams is going to be awfully difficult. I think the difference is LSU has a good defense. Alabama has a great defense. LSU has a good running game. Alabama has a better running game. So I think you give the edge to Alabama, home field. I don't know about the score, probably low score in something like 21-17.
All right, Kirk, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. That's Kirk McNair from the Bama magazine. Kirk, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
And folks, this should be a fantastic, fantastic ball game on Saturday. As I said, I mean, a ton of players. You're talking about a backup, safety, a backup DB, I should say, being up there in the SEC stats. You know, LSU has a ton of guys that can make plays. I agree with Kirk. I think, you got to go with the Crimson Tide here. at home. They look like they're the better team. The one question will be, you know, that quarterback play. Could either one of these quarterbacks, one, step up and make plays to win the game, which we haven't seen too much from either one, or two, will they lose the game if given that opportunity? You know what I mean? Up until now, we haven't really seen too much in terms of these coaches opening it up, and I'm sure to start out, both teams are going to be looking to establish the running game and not be not be too open with the offense. They're probably going to be somewhat conservative in terms of the play calling early on and not be the team to make that first mistake. It'll be interesting to see how the game plays out and if either staff will let McElroy or Jefferson, who has been playing better. You know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, how coming off that bye, it was a huge week for Jefferson, a young quarterback, to get that extra week in terms of development, and he did come out strong and threw a career high in terms of yards against Auburn, and last week, obviously, against Tulane. Those numbers, you know, it's kind of tough to rate those when you compare it to playing an SEC team. But at the same time, Auburn, as good as they are, they're not Alabama. So this is definitely a new challenge for Jefferson. And you wonder if Alabama did the same thing. Did they use this extra week to develop McElroy? He's a little older than Jefferson, but in terms of experience, he was even younger heading into the year. Jefferson got a couple of starts last season. Obviously, John Parker Wilson was the man all the way for the Crimson Tide last year. It'll be interesting to see if either one of those quarterbacks are given the opportunity to win or lose the game, but you got to lean towards the Crimson Tide staying undefeated in what could be a tough battle. Now, as I mentioned, we have a couple of interviews, player interviews. We just spoke with Kirk McNair of Bama Magazine, and coming up we will hear from Javid Best, the star running back from the Cal Golden Bears, as well as North Carolina defensive end Robert Quinn. This is the College Football Insiders Radio Show, brought to you by All Access Football. We're on Block Talk Radio, also, of course, the Fantasy Sports Channel, and don't forget to go to fsc.fm for all your fantasy radio. All right, now, you know, it's a big week, a lot of big games coming up, and Cal is one of those teams who's on the cusp there in terms of they just snuck in the top 25, and, you know, a lot of people think they may be doing some things. They have a chance to have a 10-win season. They have two losses, but at the same time, they already got their two toughest games out of the way, so they don't have to play Oregon anymore. They don't have to play USC anymore, but it'll be interesting to see what they do this week against an Oregon State team that, honestly, even though they're only 5-3, I think they're every bit as good as Cal and maybe even better. Let's not forget, they haven't played Oregon yet. I'm talking about Oregon State now. That's the rival they're going to play later in the year. But they did play USC, and they played a much, much tougher than Cal did. You know, they only lost by 6 points, while Cal got completely blown out by the Trojans. And Oregon State also has a loss to Arizona, who's ranked, as well as the undefeated Iowa Hawkeyes on the road, which was a 10-point loss, the biggest loss for Oregon State. So I think Oregon State really will give the Golden Bears a tough game. Fun matchup, Jacquez Rogers for Oregon State. You got Javid Best from the Cal Golden Bears, and we're going to hear from him right now.
All right, Javid, you know, first off, let's start with your name. It's kind of like a unique name. I'm sure you must get asked this a lot out on the West Coast. I'm based on the East, but who named you, and do you know where that name comes from?
Yeah, well, my dad named me, and he's from the Caribbean, St. Lucia to be specific. And basically, his name is David, and Ja means Almighty One in his culture. So, and his name is David. So he
kind of
put Javid with Ja and David,
kind of
mixed it together and made Javid.
That's pretty cool. Have you ever been to your dad's homeland? I know both of my parents, I'm actually first generation American myself. Have you ever gone to your parents' homeland?
I went there when I was 2 years old, but I don't remember anything, so I don't even count it.
So no Caribbean vacations in the summertime?
No, I don't have any time to go now.
Well, I'm sure, you know, before you know it, you'll probably be going back and forth, you know, as often as you want. You know, I guess me being in New York, we like to get to the hot weather as often as we can. I guess in the West Coast in California, you're pretty comfortable year round.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with that.
So growing up in California, what teams did you root for? Both, you know, were you a football fan? Did you root for, did you watch college football and NFL football?
Well, growing up, I didn't watch any college football.
Okay.
I didn't watch college football until about I got into high school, and my favorite team was Miami.
The Hurricanes?
The Hurricanes. And even though they're my favorite team, I still didn't watch too much football as far as college goes. But as professional football, I was a Raider fan since I was a baby.
The Oakland Raiders, huh? They're not doing too well. They're not doing too well lately. You're hanging with them, though?
Yeah, I'm hanging with them. I'm a true fan, so I'll be a fan forever.
See, I like to hear that because I talk to a lot of guys from around the country, and I get so many, you know, Dallas Cowboys, Pittsburgh Steelers. So it's cool to hear somebody who actually roots for the hometown team. See, I'm a long-suffering Jet fan, so, you know, it's cool to hear somebody who sticks with the hometown team no matter, you know, whether they're successful or not, you know?
I mean, yeah, if you're a fan, you got to stay with your team no matter what.
And it was interesting that you really didn't grow up rooting for college. I guess you started watching college more after they started watching you than through the recruiting process.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When teams started recruiting me, then I started watching different teams' games and seeing what kind of offense they ran and trying to just focus on college more.
And talk a little bit about your decision to, you know, go to Cal. You know, from what I understand, you've received, you know, numerous scholarship offers from schools like Michigan, Notre Dame, Oregon, USC. What was it about Cal that made you pick the Golden Bears?
When I took my visit here, it really just felt like home to me. And part of that was probably because this is home for me. I'm from the Bay Area. And I fell in love with the running back coach, Ron Gould. I mean, point of view, he's the greatest running back coach in all of the NCAA. So this place just seemed right for me. And having my parents and family and friends being able to come to all the home games was important to me. So this just felt like the right place for me.
And you mentioned that, you know, during this process you started watching different teams and how they ran their offense. Was there anything particular when you watched Cal play, how they used their running backs, that you liked a lot?
The biggest thing that I saw with Cal was just their tradition of running backs. I mean, before I got here, it was like 6 years in a row there was a 1,000-yard rusher, and I just wanted to be part of that tradition.
Guys like J.J. Arrington, Marshawn Lynch, Justin Forsett before you got there. So is there kind of there's kind of expectations then, you know, that last year, your first year as a starter, did you feel you had big shoes to fill?
Yeah, I felt like I had huge shoes to fill.
And, you know, talk about that kind of transition, because there always seems to be a transition where, you know, Marshawn was Arrington's backup and Forsett was the backup, and then you were a backup for a year. Talk about that and learning from Justin Forsett as a freshman.
You just kind of listen. I mean, Forsett was a great running back, and he had a lot of things to say and a lot of things to tell me, and I just took it. I soaked in every word he said, because I knew when it was my chance to step up to the plate that I was going to have to perform. And he gave me a lot of advice, and I took it all in, and I was able to perform when I stepped up to the plate.
So you felt he was really helpful. He kind of took you under his wing and helped you out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you still keep in touch with him?
Yes, off and on, but we still keep in touch.
Yeah, I know he's not in California more, but I believe he's with the Seahawks, right? So he's not that far.
Yeah.
And if you do talk to former guys and former Golden Bears, what do you guys talk about?
We catch up on just life, first of all, just like how we're doing and everything, and then we start talking about football, and they keep telling me to just keep playing hard, and they keep giving me advice, and that's one thing I always like to hear from those guys.
And is that tradition kind of started full circle in the sense, are you the upperclassman now, a junior, second year as a starter, you're starting to take the younger guys under the wing as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I try to help them out as much as I can, help them with things that they're not getting, just making sure that they're getting all the plays that we're throwing at them. Because I know when I was in their shoes, there was a lot of stuff coming at me fast. So I just try to make it a little bit easier for them.
And what was the most difficult thing, I guess, to kind of adjust to from the high school to the college game?
I think it's the amount of workload you get. I mean, from school to the football. I mean, in school you're asked to read a lot more than you did in high school. And then on the football field, in high school, it's just you go to practice and then you're done. Here, you have meetings, practice, you got to lift weights during the week. You have just a lot more on your plate. And so the biggest thing for me was just managing the time, because there's a lot more things I had to do during the week.
Now, on the field, what do you think you've improved on the most, you know, since you got there up until today?
I think being patient as a running back.
Hmm.
I feel like when I first got here, I was just getting the ball from the quarterback and just running. And throughout my years, I've been practicing on making reads and making the right decision and being a patient runner, because that's also a very good thing to have under your belt.
See, I call myself patient too, but that's just because I'm slow. I mean, speed has been working for you pretty good, right? So I can imagine it's got a, you know, it probably doesn't come naturally for you to be a patient as a runner, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was probably one of the hardest things I had to do, because I remember Coach D told me to slow down. In my whole life, I've been telling just run as fast as you can, and this was the first time my coach was telling me to slow down before I run fast.
Now, I've also read places where you've said that you feel like you need to get a little bit bigger and a little bit stronger. What would you say would be kind of the ideal weight strength for you, and how close are you to getting to there?
I think my ideal weight would be somewhere around 205 to 210. Right now I'm at 200, so I feel like I'm on pace to get that.
All right, you're pretty close. Now, you ran track in high school, right?
Yeah.
How come you decided not to do that at the college level and focus solely on football?
Well, my freshman year I got hurt, so I didn't run.
Okay.
And after that, it was kind of like I started to notice that football was just too demanding. And throwing another sport in there that's also a demanding sport would probably be just too much for me to handle. So I just decided to just focus on football.
Do you ever have any teammates challenge you to a race? I spoke to Sidquan Thompson earlier in the season, and I don't think he said he's interested in racing you.
Yeah, well, I mean, when we do our summer workouts, we always race each other, and most of the time I end up winning, but there's a couple of guys that challenge me every week.
Now, you say most of the time. Does that mean somebody's actually beaten you?
Yeah, I mean, when we're running, like, 10 hundreds. Somebody gets me towards the end.
All right. Fair enough. Who's that? Who's somebody on that team that can match up with you? You know, step for step.
Shane's a fast guy. Who else? We got a couple of freshmen that are fast. There's E.C. Tafilo and Steve Williams.
All right, Javid, before we let you go, we close things out with the segment we call Three and Out, where I give you three quick questions. So first down, Oakland Raider fan, who's your all-time Raider, favorite Raider?
Charles Woodson.
Second down, since you picked a corner, I'll ask you, who's your all-time favorite running back, you know, any team?
I'm going to have to go back in the days, Ricky Williams.
All right, back in the day, so not Wildcat Ricky Williams, back in the day, Ricky
not
Williams.
Wildcat, back in the day.
All right, and third down, do you have anything you do on game day to get ready, any traditions or music you listen to?
I listen to music. I listen to a lot of music. It starts off as R&B, and then the pace gets faster and faster the closer we get the game done.
Kind of like how the defense needs to do when they prepare for you. Javid? Thanks a lot for giving us some time today, and good luck with your game this week.
Thank you.
All right, that was Javid Best, the running back from the Cal Golden Bears, and he'll be going up against Jacquizz Rodgers and the Oregon State Beavers in a big Pac-10 clash. Welcome back. This is College Football Insiders Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Mogollon. This is brought to you by All Access Football. Special thanks also to the Fantasy Sports Channel. And if you want to listen to Fantasy Radio, you can always get it at fsc.fm. That's the FSC, www.fsc.fm for the Fantasy Sports Channel. Earlier on in the show, we had Kirk McNair, the editor of the Bama Magazine, as we broke down the Alabama-LSU game on Saturday. And coming up, we have an interview with defensive end Robert Quinn from the University of North Carolina, and he talks about his story overcoming a brain tumor in high school as a senior, and now he's one of the premier pass rushers in the nation. But before we get to that, we have a caller on the line. Hi, caller. Welcome to College Football Insiders Radio. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Sandra. I'll be confirming your order of $28 at each of the price of $100.
Okay. I'm not sure what that was about at all, but I guess some people, I don't know, they have nothing better to do than to waste their time. You know, in the future, they should just try not to waste other people's times as well and stick to wasting their own. Let's stay in the Pac-10. We were going to do that with Calron Sykes, but he's not able to call us today. And, you know, some of the things that I wanted to talk to him about was how good these teams are. How good is Oregon? How good is USC? Is USC still a 10-win team, still a BCS bowl team? Both of those things are still within their reach, I believe. You know, if they run the table and finish the season 10-2, I still think they will be very close. They will be right there to make a BCS bowl, even though they will not repeat for the eighth straight year as Pac-10 champ. And I think an interesting thing to follow as the season winds down and continues is checking the rankings and seeing how Boise and Oregon match up with each other. You know what I mean? Where do they stack up with each other? Is it possible for Oregon, who right now is number 8 in the BCS standings, number 8 in the coaches poll, and number 7 in the AP, as opposed to Boise State, who's 7 in the BCS poll, one spot ahead. They're 5 in the coaches poll, which is 3 spots ahead, and 5 in the AP poll, which is 2 spots ahead. If Oregon wins out and finishes the season 11-1 as Pac-10 champ, will they jump Boise in the rankings? And, you know, Boise is not only competing with Oregon for positioning, they might be competing with USC for that at-large bid. You know, there's only that one automatic bid that goes to a non-BCS school, and right now, if they run, if they continue, it will be TCU. It will be the team. Now, that doesn't mean that there can only be one BCS school. I've seen some people say that and write that. You can't. You are allowed to have more than one non-BCS school. There's no rule against it. But, you know, typically the bowls, the way it works, they're going to want a bigger name. You know, they're going to want USC, or if Notre Dame goes 10-2, they're going to want Notre Dame ahead of a Boise State. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes, how that plays out in terms of where Boise stacks up against both USC and Oregon, who they beat head-to-head in the final BCS rankings, and that how that ultimately impacts the BCS bowls and where those teams all fall. And, you know, USC has a big game this weekend against Arizona State on at 8 o'clock on ABC. Honestly, I'll be surprised if Arizona State really plays with them. You know, I don't think this is a great Arizona State team. I think USC is going to come out and play a strong game off this loss, and, you know, they're going to finally bounce back. The defense has struggled for a couple of weeks now, so it'll be interesting to see how they do, if they can actually – you know, play a little better than they have for 3 weeks. Obviously, you know, the opponent isn't the same as it was last week. And Arizona State isn't quite at the level of Oregon. All right, before we get to our interview with North Carolina's Robert Quinn, we have a caller on the line. Okay, we lost the caller. So we're going to go to the interview with defensive end Robert Quinn from the North Carolina Tar Heels, one of the top pass rushers in the nation, and, you know, a pretty amazing story, his recovering from a brain tumor as a senior in high school.
Joining me now in this College Football Insider's Player Spotlight is sophomore defensive end Robert Quinn from the University of North Carolina. Quinn is one of the most electrifying pass rushers in the country, and the South Carolina native leads the Tar Heels' vaunted defense in sacks with 7, 11 tackles for a loss, as well as 3 forced fumbles. He was also the winner of the 2008 Brian Piccolo Award, which goes to the most courageous football player in the ACC. Last Thursday night in Blacksburg, the Tar Heels knocked off the highly ranked Hokies to improve their record to 5-3 overall. Hey, Robert, how's it going today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Let's start here. I hear your nickname is Elroy. Where does that come from?
It's a South Carolina dance called Crank That Roy, and Crank That Elroy, and the other defense and EJ started calling me Elroy one day, and it sort of just stuck.
And how do you feel about that nickname?
I tell people, hey, my name's Elroy, or, either Rob or Elroy, that's what I tell them.
I guess that means you like it then. This exposes me. See, I still think I'm kind of hip. I'm in my 30s from New York, but I hear Elroy, I think Jetsons. So this exposes me as kind of being an old man right now. You know what I mean?
I hear
you. All right, let's go back a little bit. As I mentioned, you were the 2008 Brian Piccolo Award winner, and, you know, I'm sure some people around the country have heard of your story. Some may have not. Your senior year of high school, you were diagnosed with a brain tumor. You collapsed, I believe, in your family bathroom. Can you take us back through that a little bit?
Like I said, my senior year, I was diagnosed. I guess to make a long story short, I was having headaches on an everyday basis. And one time in school, I blacked out. And one time driving, I was, driving confused and lost. Then that early Sunday morning, I blacked out once in my room, then the second time in the bathroom, and that's when I got taken to the hospital, and found out I had that brain tumor, and basically just try to work my way from there. It's really just a series of headaches, and like I said, they found a tumor.
And how about, now I'm sure, from what we know, everything is good with you. Are there any concerns at all moving forward or precautions you need to take and stuff?
Not really. Myself personally, I got to watch out for, if I start getting headaches again or things just don't start or things starting to feel right. And I'm basically just watching over myself. I don't really try to keep it on my mind at all.
And at any point, did you think you might not be able to play football again, or when did you find out you'd be okay and you could keep pushing for that dream to play football?
The first couple of days when I was in after surgery, the neurosurgeon told me I wouldn't be able to play again. I guess just letting me know, because they didn't know what was going to happen, if they had to put a shunt in my head or not.
Right.
So she just, gave me the worst scenario. For a couple of days, I was hurt and thought my athletic career was over. But the nurse surgeon, Dr. Bailey, came back a couple of days later and said, we'll see what happens. So they didn't have to put the shunt in. And about halfway through wrestling season, once I got cleared to wrestle, they said I could do all athletic football and wrestle.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's fantastic that, obviously it's not a fantastic story that you had to go through this, but it's, great that you were able to push through and still able to, play football and do the things you want to do with your life. We're talking to Robert Quinn, defensive end from North Carolina. Were you familiar at all with the Brian Piccolo story before you won the award?
No, not really. I really didn't find much out about it until after I won it. I didn't really know anything about it, but people were telling me, if I'm not mistaken, him.
Yeah, that's right.
For teammates, and just tell me a little story about that.
It's actually a pretty cool movie. Brian's songs from the 70s. James Caan played Brian Piccolo, and Billy Dee Williams played Gale Sayers. It's a pretty good movie if you're a sports fan. Let's talk a little bit, you know, about your career so far at Chapel Hill. You know, what allows you to get into the backfield so often? You know, I talked about your numbers at the top. You always seem to be getting penetration, whether it's sacks on the quarterbacks or getting to the running game. What about your game allows you to do that?
I guess it really just starts off by getting off on the football. So if you split second late, the O lineman got to jump on you. And, you know, they're going to get, I guess, they might get that little split second. They got want to help them get a better position on you than might slow you down and play, and I think it's like 4.2 or some seconds per play, and just every little second counts. So really just starting off by getting up on the ball, then defeating the O lineman in front of you, and just when you get the opportunity to make a play, make sure you make it.
Now, I noticed a couple of weeks ago that Lawrence Taylor was on your guys' sidelines. Did you get to meet and talk to the legendary LT?
Yeah, he came the day before, or the Friday, when we was in the hotel. He came and spoke to us a little bit, and I didn't meet him like personally, but I mean some of the other teammates did. But yeah, he came to meet our team at the team meeting, and you know, talk to us a little bit about his days back in Chapel Hill and whatnot.
And how cool was that experience? I mean, not only was he, you know, a great Tar Heel, he went on to a Hall of Fame NFL career, and he played your position at UNC.
Yeah, me and Tavares Brown, another D-line, we were talking, like, what if he tells Lawrence Taylor he's going to break a sack right now? Or if he might come tackle me. Some jokes. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool to see a legendary player like Lawrence Taylor himself in person.
If you see him again, you got to go up and tell him that, Sam, I'm going after your record. I would love to know what he would do, you know, how he would react, you know.
Yeah.
and talk a little bit about playing for Coach Blake, who's considered one of the top D-line coaches in the country.
Coach Blake, since last year, I know, like me and the other Michael Maxfield and Clint Copeland, when we got thrown to the fire early, that's two freshmen going out there and having to make plays and actually be on the field so fast. You know, he's strict and, you know, hard on us, but he's trying to make us like that best player that, you know, we can be, like trying to get the best out of us. I mean, but overall, I mean, he's a good coach, you know, teaching us technique and how to beat alignment on the pass rush and looking at the little keys to help us or give us a read that might be able to decide what plays they might run out of this and out of this formation. But he's a very good coach.
All right, Robert, before we let you go, we close things out with a quick ending. We call three and out, where I give you three quick hitters. I read that you like to first down, so I read that you would like to guest star on WWE. So who's your favorite all-time wrestler?
I haven't watched in a while, but when I was younger, it always was named Kane. Like, I remember this be the Undertaker's brother.
All right, Jimmy Superfly Snuka was mine, but that was way back when. Second down, I read you're a Cowboy fan, so who's your favorite all-time Cowboy?
Deion Sanders. When I first started playing football in seventh grade, DB trying to be the next Deion.
I love me some primetime, too. Third down, favorite TV show?
Family Guy.
All right, not a bad choice. A nice little comedy cartoon there. Good stuff. Robert, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time, and good luck this week.
Okay, thank you.
Great story there from Robert Quinn of the University of North Carolina. Phenomenal pass rusher. He's just a true sophomore, so he will definitely be back for another year. But this kid really knows how to get after the quarterback, and he's kind of come to the forefront on a defense that has a lot of 4- and 5-star recruits. All right, we're going to shift gears from the ACC and talk some Big Ten football. We have a call on the line waiting for that. got Doc on the line, the Ohio State fan. Hey, Doc, how's it going?
Hey, brother, doing real good. That'll get you, get me ready to run through a wall for this weekend. Big game. Big game against our rivals from Pennsylvania, the Nittany Lions. It's one of those games that the Big Ten puts on our calendar every year. It's not a game that rotates off the schedule, and it's a huge game. And adding to that, Terrell Pryor being from Pennsylvania, I'm sure he'll get a warm welcome from the 115,000 Nittany Lions fans. I wanted to just reply to one of your questions you put in the chat room about what you talked about with Terrell Pryor. I mean, this guy is a gifted athlete, no doubt about it. And you ask run or pass. I think he's taken a couple steps back, actually, this year from last, because we have concentrated on him being a passer. That's the Jim Tressel style. That's what he wants out of a dual-threat quarterback, pass first. And he's still got a long ways to go, in my opinion, to get to where Troy Smith was, even half of where Troy Smith was. He's still dropping back, holding on to the ball, patting in his hands two or three times before getting rid of it, and he's staring down receivers. And if he does that in Happy Valley, it's not going to be good for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, that's something we talked about the last couple of weeks. Normally we have our Big Ten insider, John Sears, is normally with us, and he was not able to join us this week. But we talked a lot about that. And what's the take there in Ohio, you know, in terms of are they really putting Pryor in the position to make the best plays he can on any given week? Or it almost seems like they're trying to groom him and develop him as a passer for the future rather than letting him go and let him make plays. I mean, I remember going back to the USC game, and I'm watching this game, and I'm thinking, man, why don't they let him run the ball? He's a phenomenal athlete in the open field. They finally called a draw play on the 3rd and 18, and the kid ran for 20 yards and got the first down. And I'm like, you know, it doesn't seem that complicated to me.
Well, the play calling here in Columbus by Coach Tressel this year has it's been under the microscope. And it more this year than in the last couple. And frankly, this team has not looked good offensively since 2006. You had a very pedestrian performance by Beckman, even though we went to the title game in 07. That was by default, if you ask any honest Buckeye fan. We should have never have been in that title game.
And great defense, too.
Great defense, exactly. That helped. But really, 2008 and 2009, the offense has been just very, very pedestrian, very vanilla, and the point is well taken. Are we letting Terrell Pryor showcase his talents? No, I don't think we are, because in the long-range plan, Tressel wants a dual-threat quarterback that will throw first, and that's what we had with Troy Smith. That's the blueprint. And for those that have questions about where does Tressel want to take Pryor, look at Troy Smith.
Yeah, and I don't see it right now. I don't see it just yet in terms of his development as a passer. He looks really raw. He misses open guys where I'm not even talking about overthrowing or underthrowing. He just doesn't see them often and, you know, makes the wrong decision and leaving guys open that he doesn't connect with. I really think, you know, had he played a little bit better, not even a lot better, a little bit better, they could be still undefeated, because there were plays left on the field against USC, who now we see has two losses and isn't necessarily the vaunted USC of past. So what do you? I'm really, you know, I really don't have a great feel for this game on Saturday myself, Doc, because, you know, we've seen the inconsistencies from Ohio State. We've seen Pryor get a little better, but we saw him have good games before and regress this season. He's had a little bit of an up-and-down year. And Penn State, you know, they really haven't beaten anybody yet. You know, as impressive as they've looked the last couple of weeks, their best wins are against who? Minnesota, Michigan, Northwestern, teams that are 5-4, barely hovering over 500. And, you know, that game was 13-10 last week before Kafka got hurt against Northwestern, and then they ran away in the second half when the Northwestern offense simply could not move the ball. A lot of good defensive players on both of these teams. Question marks on offense. What do you think your Buckeyes are going to do this Saturday?
Well, I am cautiously optimistic. I think you have two similar teams here, somewhat evenly matched, with Penn State having the edge on the offensive side of the ball. I'm looking for a game much like the USC game that we played earlier this season. It's going to be back and forth, and that's also typical Ohio State Penn State. You don't typically see a lot of points scored. You see a lot. It's a big chess match, and that sort of favors the Jim Tressel philosophy of football. Punt the ball, run and punt is kind of his thing until you get field position in your favor. That's going to be tough for us to do on the road with a young team and 115,000 fans. I think Ohio State's offense is good for 10 points, 13 points. I think Penn State's offense is good for 10 points, and it's going to come down to holding on to the ball. I like Ohio State 13-10. We'll see what happens. I would love to see Terrell Pryor come out and throw the ball for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns and maybe run for another 50. But that's drinking some major scarlet-colored Kool-Aid. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, Doc, I agree with you. I see it going around there. As you said, I could easily see a 13 score going either way, and it probably will come down to which team doesn't make the mistake. Both of these coaches, if truth be told, like to play some conservative football and try to avoid making those mistakes. So I think the team that protects the ball, the team that doesn't commit the penalties, it sounds very cliche, but it is what it is. I think that's what we're going to see on Saturday.
It's as simple as that, and the one X factor here that I don't know if you know about, but our field goal kicker went down last week.
Yes.
Aaron Petrie by a cheap shot from this kid from New Mexico State in garbage time, and he's out for the year, so our field goal kicker is gone, and that could be a factor in this game.
No, it definitely could be, especially when you're talking about teams that, third downs might run the ball more than you think. It could turn into a field goal matchup, and that's definitely a major loss. Petrie was a guy who's a proven kicker, and particularly in that atmosphere, as you mentioned earlier, 115,000 crazy fans for the opposition. That's a tough spot to break in a new kicker. Doc, thanks a lot for joining us, and hopefully you'll call in again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Anytime. And that was our fan, Doc. And, as you folks listen, if you chime in the chat room, I will cue up the fight song for your team. If you get in the chat room and let me know you're calling in and who you're rooting for, I will get that fight song on for you as well. We like to treat our listeners as special as our guests. All right, folks, we only got about a minute left. Big weekend of college football. Other big games that we didn't really get a chance to dive into. Oklahoma against Nebraska. Doc just mentioned it. You know, Ohio State and Michigan play every year. Ohio State and Penn State play every year. In the SEC, you got schools like Auburn and Georgia crossing divisions. They play every year. Big 12, get with it. Let's get an Oklahoma-Nebraska every single year. Growing up, this was always a big rivalry game. Friday after Thanksgiving, Oklahoma-Nebraska, that was right up there with Alabama-Auburn, right up there with Michigan-Ohio State, and now we don't even get to see these teams play on a year-in, year-out basis, which to me is a disgrace. They got to find a way to get it together and get those teams squared off each and every single season. All right, folks, thanks for joining us. Don't forget to go to www.nfldraftbible.com and get the CFI newsletter.